is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Most Mondays for the past several months, we've been focusing on a lot of COVID-19 related issues and information with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, and again doing that today. Dr. Bob, yesterday, the one-year anniversary of the first COVID-19 case in Oregon. What do you remember about that time?
Well, what I remember about that time was that we were worried about what was happening. I think we could see in China that this was going to be a rapidly spreading and very serious pandemic. So by this time last year, we were already girded for the battle that was to be ahead.
So when did you personally begin to get concerned about this? Because I know it was really kind of more in January, it seemed like, when a little bit of information started to come out.
Right. Even by January, we were really quite concerned. As you may remember, I was on your show, your morning show, at the end of January, telling about the possibility of this being a really treacherous thing.
And I remember that first conversation, and as you headed out, I remember thinking, oh, it's in China, it's going to stay in China. Didn't really work out that way.
It really didn't work out that way. In this world where we have such rapid travel, where you can get really around the world in just one day, these things are going to spread. We have been really unable to contain respiratory viruses. Now, Ebola, which is another very contagious one, we've pretty much contained that to Africa. But for respiratory viruses, we have not been able to contain those.
So as things began, we had the first COVID-19 case in Oregon, and then it was the next Sunday when we went into the state of emergency. And I remember you were one of the health officials speaking, because if I remember right, didn't Douglas County have one of the early cases in Oregon?
Right. We had a case in the first weekend of March last year, and we spoke about it at the time. I mean, it was really, really incredibly worrisome at the time that this disease could spread across the world and to a place so rural as Oregon. I mean, we don't really have a tremendous amount of travel to China, so to have our first case in March was really a bit worrisome.
And what was it like for public health at that point? I mean, you're doing all the routine things you normally do, and then this jumps up and people recognize that this is going to be a whole different situation.
Yes, and we had a bunch of people who really had done this before. And so that was really, truly remarkable. So some of the other people who worked here had worked on other outbreaks, and so they were aware of it, and we pretty much got ready. So last year, our Douglas Public Health Network with just 6 or 7 individuals. Now we're up to 35 individuals working on the pandemic. So really a tremendous expansion to meet the need.
And one of the things I remember you saying early on was, because these are all different from each other, that probably along the way, since no one was around in 1918, that probably, you know, with mistakes would be made, things would shift, people would change their mind as to what should be done. And that certainly is borne out to be the case.
That has certainly borne out to be the case. Now, when I look back, what I do see is that we probably have made this more complicated than it needs to be. You know, we've changed advice again and again. But otherwise, I think Oregon has had a fairly good response to this.
It's interesting when you tell folks in this area that we have been one of the lowest counties in the nation for most of this time. I think for some people, especially if they in normal times don't travel much, are a bit surprised because they see the impacts it's had here and then think about what it is in these areas like New York early on, et cetera, where it's been a whole lot worse.
Yes. And even now, when we've had a bit of a spike in cases, we're still below the national average. So our national, you know, cases around 18 per day, we're averaging now. The rest of the country is averaging over 20 a day. So even during what we consider to be our worst time, we're still better than many of the other areas.
So in the news, the vaccines, the third one, talk about that. Let's find out more about it.
So there's a third vaccine now. It's called the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, manufactured by Janssen Pharmaceuticals. It's a adenovirus vector vaccine, a new kind of vaccine, and it appears to be incredibly effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths, actually 100% effective in preventing hospitalizations and deaths. It's been very effective against preventing symptomatic disease. It looks to be less effective, perhaps, than the Moderna and the Pfizer, but the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines were trialed at a time when there was no variants, very few variants, and now that there are a lot more variants, it seems to be doing pretty well. So using a baseball analogy, Moderna and Pfizer were tested at a time where they didn't know how to throw curveballs, and now the virus knows how to throw curveballs and sliders. So the fact that the efficacy may be a little less is not only not surprising, and it's really hard to compare to the previous. So I think any of the vaccines are great, and I would get whatever vaccine is available.
Well, with the third one, and it seems like because it is one dose, that changes things a bit, because when the other two would talk about the number of doses available, you had to basically divide that in half because people were ultimately going to need two. Now, this one being one, is this going to likely speed up the potential for people to be vaccinated sooner?
Yes. I just found out this morning that we're going to be getting 1,200 doses of the J&J vaccine by midweek, and we're hoping to use those especially for hard-to-get-at populations. So rural populations, people in foster homes, maybe people in the jail, those would all be complicated groups to reach otherwise, and we're planning to use the J&J for that group.
And along with those distribution routes, would this also lead to maybe more of the mass vaccination clinics?
It might. Right now, we're depending mostly upon our community providers. We got a tremendous amount more vaccine in just the last week. And so if we do have vaccine left over after we've given it to our community providers, we may well do a mass event. So stay tuned.
And I know there was a larger one for, I guess it was a second dose for educators that was held on Saturday. And I think the number I saw, about 740 people getting, I believe in most cases or all cases, their second dose.
Right. So we've done first doses for people on the 23rd and the 30th. And then we did second doses last week and this weekend. So I think 772 was the number.
And it's been interesting for me to watch everyone, you know, every area, whether it's Oregon or even other regions, everybody's got a little bit different way of doing these larger clinics. You've talked about not doing them in cars so that people can be observed better. But I do see a lot of places where that's being done. Maybe those are warmer climates or whatever, where it's a, you know, a different situation. It's interesting to just see how people decide to do these and not always the same way.
Right. So early on, we were cautious because of the reports of the anaphylactic reactions associated with both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. So early on, it looked like it could be as low as 1 in 1,000, which would mean that if you gave 1,000 vaccines, you might expect one of those. It now appears that those anaphylactic-like reactions are much less common, maybe 1 in 100,000. So I think perhaps a drive-through thing might work. Now, we're still worried about seniors. So I was talking to the person who heads the state effort today, and he talks about the Oregon Convention Center, and some of the seniors need to walk 1 mile between the time they get off public transit to the time they get their vaccine and then back to public transit. That, I think, is way too long, and they're considering doing something different because that becomes an incredible barrier for seniors. So I think we're pleased with our plan of distributing in pharmacies and in doctor's offices. However, as we do get more vaccine, we may do a drive-through event.
Well, and we're also getting closer to spring, too, which would make an outdoor or a car side event a little easier just because you're going to be less worried about weather issues.
Yes. Well, we do these drive-through events at the fairgrounds underneath the grandstands. It gets incredibly cold underneath there in the wintertime, and it's hard for people to work in that temperature. But as we get into March and April, the weather is likely to be nicer, and a beautiful weekend this weekend, and we think we may be able to do those.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer back in a moment on Inside Douglas County, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1246, Lars Larson at 1, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. Another look at topics related to the COVID-19 situation. Let's talk about the local cases, though the numbers have been dropping somewhat lately. We went back up a little bit today, I see, and the report just hit my email a few minutes ago. But talk more about what might be behind these cases recently locally.
So the local cases have been distributed among nursing homes, although those seem to have quieted down. Workplaces, we've really seen quite a few among workplaces, especially the mills. And then we've also seen a lot of cases associated with schools. The mills seem to be people who hang out before, during, and after work, who've spread it to others at work.
And as well, we're now in the extreme status for the next week and a half or so, and that does that always worry you when we get to that level?
Yeah, so it always worries me when our number of cases is going up, because cases breed other cases. So what happens is when somebody's got a case, they spread it to the people in their family, they spread it to the people at work. If one of those people is working in a nursing home, it can spread to the nursing home. We think to get this under control, we're going to have to get our case count down to just a few a day so that we can really put a tremendous amount of effort in quarantining those that have the disease. So they typically say when you can get the number of cases down to 1 in 100,000 per day, you can really do the tremendous amount of quarantining and case finding that you need to do.
So let's talk about the time frame for when someone is exposed versus when they begin to have symptoms or are at risk of symptoms. Go through that.
So let's say you get exposed on March the 1st. The incubation period, we think, is between 3 and 14 days typically, but almost always, if people are going to develop symptoms, they'll develop symptoms on the 5th or 6th day, and they'll be start being contagious on the 3rd and 4th day. So if you get exposed, go to a party on a Sunday. Typically, it's going to be 1, 2, 3 days, Wednesday and Thursday, that you'll be contagious, and typically not till Friday or Saturday that you would actually have symptoms. And what we see frequently is that people feel fine on Wednesday and Thursday, go to work, and spread it to others. In fact, what we've seen is people get tested on Wednesday and Thursday, think they are good, and then travel, and then develop symptoms on Friday and Saturday. So one of the truly nefarious things about this virus is that it seems to be most contagious before you have symptoms, and thus it's really hard to control.
And that also ties into the aspect that seems counterintuitive to me, at least under normal situations, about waiting to be tested a little bit longer, lest you test negative first and then test positive later.
Well, that's the other problem, is that the tests, especially the rapid tests, are not always positive on the first day of symptoms and are rarely positive before you're symptomatic. So just the way they work, by looking for the protein from the virus, they tend to take another day. So our recommendation is that if you're sick, stay home. If you're still sick the next day, please get tested.
And again, it's interesting because, historically, a lot of people, it almost used to be like a point of pride that you could, you're a little bit sick, but you can kind of stay away from other people and you keep working anyway. And that's certainly proven to be the opposite direction you want people to go right now.
Yeah, so in the United States, we really have had this deal about people working when they're mildly ill, and that has led to people spreading disease. So we're really saying, at least for this year, if you're 6 day home, as I always say, you know, we give kids perfect attendance awards. Although when kids have perfect attendance awards, they likely are spreading disease, going to school mildly sick and spreading disease to others. So at least during this time, if you're sick, please stay home.
So statewide, the drop in cases continues. Is that due in part to some folks already being vaccinated?
Perhaps a little bit. So the problem is that the people who have gotten vaccinated were typically not the people who really spread a lot in the past. So the people who have gotten vaccinated are mostly the elderly and people in nursing homes and healthcare workers. We do not think these were people who were, for the most part, super spreaders. Right? So we think super spreaders are going to be mostly people at work or people at school who are feeling well and going and spread it to others. We haven't gotten to those yet. So I don't think we're going to see a real drop due to vaccination until we start getting to some of the younger people who may be spreading it to lots of people.
Now, some of the metro areas have gone down. In fact, Clackamas and Washington County is now down at moderate risk level after being at extreme for a very long time. What parts of the state, though, are getting hit harder right now along with Douglas?
Well, right now, it's the areas that were previously open that seem to be really struggling the most. So places that previously had schools open and other things open are more likely to now be having issues with higher amounts of disease. And I predict that when Clackamas and Multnomah open up, they're gonna have issues too.
What about national hotspots right now?
So the national hotspots now are going to be, there are places in California still very hot, lots of places in Texas, South Carolina, and New York. So really very spread out that continue to have a fair number of cases.
And looking around the world, what are you seeing?
Well, so around the world, places in Europe really seem to be struggling. And what's interesting is that there's some places in Europe that are really quite low, Norway and Finland, and then other places interspersed are quite high. So Norway and Finland, pretty low. Sweden is pretty high. Germany, which almost envelops Czechoslovakia, is low, but Czechoslovakia is very high. And then if you look in the Balkans, there are areas that are very high and very low. So it appears to be Europe seems to be the hot spot. Brazil continues to have a lot of disease. And Brazil is especially worrisome because it was thought that at one point they had enough disease that enough people would be immune that they would be kind of past this. Sadly, that is not what we've seen. And Brazil has continued to struggle, perhaps with variants. We don't really know.
Yeah, let's talk about these variants a little bit. I think a lot of people are still having a hard time wrapping around what a variant actually is and why there are multiple ones.
So variants are mutations, and all diseases mutate. All viruses mutate. Some mutate very quickly, like the flu and HIV. Some mutate very slowly, like the measles. This one's kind of in the middle. It's an average kind of mutator. And what happens is when you mutate, you typically are changing one base pair of the mRNA sequence, which changes then one amino acid in a protein. And so many of these changes are going to be nonsense, don't help at all, and the thing dies off, or they're going to be really not significant. It's going to be in a part of the virus, which is not really important. But occasionally, maybe one time in 1,000, one of these mutations makes it actually more contagious. So, for example, early on, there was a change in the 614 amino acid, and that changed it to an amino acid which made the protein structure more stable. And when it got more stable, it was now more contagious. And we've seen a bunch of these changes in about 8 or 10 different amino acids, which actually makes this more contagious, perhaps more deadly, and perhaps a little less susceptible to the vaccine.
So for education and sports, it's kind of like 2 steps forward, 1 step back right now. You get schools going a bit more. They start to begin towards sports this week here locally, but then you end up with a case at Roseburg High and things back down again. What concerns do you have about school sports happening?
Well, school sports are so important. I mean, kids need to get out there. Sports are much more than just athletics. It's the camaraderie, it's the team building, it's the leadership skills that people get through sports. So I think they're important. The problem is that without very, very careful monitoring, there's going to be spread during sports. You know, we've seen the professional teams really, really struggle with this. And so we're going to see some struggles here, but I still think it's good to do. I think the students can really help, especially by staying home when they're sick.
What about summer events? I've been getting that question a lot in the last week. What's it going to take to be able to have some outdoor summer events this year?
So predictions are hard, especially about the future and especially about this virus. But I would hope by this summer we're going to see enough people vaccinated, especially young people vaccinated, and it'll just be summertime. So I would hope we see less disease so that some of the things that we're used to in the summertime may happen. So, for example, I think there's a good possibility you could do music on the half shell. It's outside because people are sitting on their own blankets. They're pretty much spaced. And so that is one of the safer activities. I think the fair is still up in the air, but I think that things that you can do when you can do them outside, probably going to be pretty good. I think probably Doc Stewart's baseball is going to be fine this summer. I think picnics in the park may still be good.
And is it going to take things like maybe even a lower capacity limit or even signage in an outdoor venue?
Right. So we may have signage. For example, you could imagine if they were going to do music on the half shell, they might have the blanket spaced a little bit more than they have space now. And if you're going to do other outdoor activities, you may not fill every seat at the Doc Stewart Stadium. You might have family groups be three seats apart. But those are things that you could do. And while the attendance might be down a little bit, it'd still be a lot like the past.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with our weekly in-depth look at topics related to COVID-19. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.